It's the Stream Leader Report live panel. Creators talking to creators. Raw, real, and unscripted. And sometimes they say the quiet part out loud. Here are your hosts, Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, Rob Greenlee, and Ross Brand.
All right, hey gang, I can't think of a better day to have a show because it's all going down today. The big cage match is starting. Twitter's got a competitor in Instagram Threads, and we are the Stream Leader Report live panel on 100 TV. I'm joined by Claudia Santiago from Viva La Stage, Rob Greenlee from The Trust Factor, Rebecca Gunter from Business in the Raw, and I'm Ross Brand from the Stream Leader Report. We're each going to bring a story, but Claudia's got the big story of the day, the week, maybe the year in social media. So I'm going to turn it over to you. Let's get right into it, Claudia.
Oh, my. First up, hot seat. First of all, I just want to thank everybody. This panel is absolutely amazing, and we have so much fun, too. There's such, yeah, right? And big thanks to Ross Brand for instigating and organizing us all. Woo! Yeah, I just thank had that you. On my heart. Okay, so today I am sporting blonde. It's because I have another show coming up. But, you know, it's kind of Lady Gaga meets Christina Aguilera. I don't know what, but at the end of the day, I'm still Claudia.
Still Claudia.
Doesn't matter what color. I debated whether to throw my purple one on or my blue one on. Anyways, it's blonde today. So with Twitter and Threads, are they the same? I'm going to do a lot of questioning today because, to be quite honest with you, I didn't know a whole lot until I started digging in. So from what I've been digging into, it's somehow connected with this Mastodon. It started throwing me for a loop. So Rob, you were answering like a whole lot of details on my question. And Mr. Rob is like, I love him because he like researches in detail. Rob, what have you got to say about this?
Yeah, I got into it and started using it today. I felt like I was a little late to the party, but it does seem to be this part of this Fediverse, which is kind of a conglomerate of relatively new social type platforms, which I thought was interesting. That really, this is a Facebook product. Let's say what it is. It's being linked up with Instagram. But it's really a Facebook product. But it really is, I think, maybe the beginnings of something, a kind of new paradigm in how our personal information is being shared across multiple social platforms, to be a little bit more distributed, less concentrated. And it's a little surprising that Facebook would do this because their whole business model is built around concentrating information about all of us. So that's kind of my comment. But as far as a competitor to Twitter, I think it has a long way to go on that. I have seen similar kind of actions on the platform to what I see on Twitter to some degree. I don't know if there's any kind of character limits. I haven't explored it that far to find out. My guess is there probably isn't, because that's kind of the direction Twitter is going as well. So, you know, if you get the little blue check mark, you can, which I see a lot of people on Threads having that little blue check mark, which I guess you can get with the Instagram. I haven't paid for it or whatever and gone down that path yet. But yeah, I see a lot of similarities in these two platforms. And if they're not doing any kind of character limit, okay, it's a 500 character. Okay.
Yeah, which I tried this morning and it limited me right away.
Oh, it did. Okay. Yep. And so that's a much smaller count than what we're seeing on Twitter today and what's possible on Twitter. I'm seeing some very long posts on Twitter now. So that is good to see. I've been hoping for that for a long time.
I'm going to be looking at my phone a little bit because, like I said, like I'm totally green to this. In fact, in our group chat, I went, what in the world is a Fediverse? Like, I'm still trying to catch up to AI and Metaverse. And now we got Fediverse, and quite amazing, the statistics. And honestly, I mean, I am an entertainer, but I am really focused too on the business side of things and social media, because as a as an entertainer entrepreneur, I got to know what I'm putting my info into and what I'm doing. And Ross, you brought up a key point too, which made me actually think a bit more, because at first I thought, well, if Instagram has our info, Facebook has our info, where is this going with security and stuff? So I don't know, maybe Ross, can you elaborate a little bit more? Because when you threw that out, I thought, Ross might have some insights here.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is they're talking about Mastodon, and they're talking about what I understand it is this distributed network idea, where it exists, at least the idea with Mastodon, and I spent about 5 minutes on Mastodon, I'm no expert on it at all, but the idea with it, I understood from Mastodon, was that by having the site or the social network on no one central authority, under one not one central server, but distributed across all these different servers, somehow that protects our data and our information. Okay, so when I hear that, I hear Meta, Facebook, Zuck, and friends talking about putting this out there and comparing it to Mastodon and such, I wonder why they need even a wider range of data to take from, like, they're trying to become the internet, Facebook. They're not trying to distribute the internet across different ownership and different servers, and nobody controls all the data. They're trying to own everything. They would like it to be one stop and nowhere else but Meta properties. So I think it's a strange comparison. Now, it may work similarly in that your information goes to one place online and then you can then distribute it to other networks or whatever. But I mean, I don't see that that's a huge advantage as a user, but maybe I don't understand how that all comes together. But what I do know is that they get a lot of data from you, and that's kind of been, that's how it goes. I figure I've already given it all to Facebook and Instagram, so if they have it for this product, how much more damage can they do? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to make of all this at this point, but my understanding of Mastodon and this, it kind of runs counter to what the idea behind Mastodon was.
To quote Elon Musk, he says, he said this on Twitter, "I'm sure Earth can't wait to be exclusively under Zuck's thumb with no other options. At least it will be quote unquote sane." Was worried there for a moment. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. I kind of worry a little bit that this is maybe a little bit of smoke and mirrors that's being played with us. I mean, if you think about just the App Store, for Google as well as Apple, you know, all those individual apps, right, could be an analogy to be drawn to this Fediverse, right? All those share information to each other in a common source. So just because it's a distributed network doesn't mean it's secure. It just means that maybe there has to be more interconnections between all those separate servers, but it certainly is no guarantee that it's secure from the data being all pulled into some other centralized platform.
You know, when setting up my consulting clients on online, one of the things I've done for years, and knock on wood, none of us have ever been hacked. Every social platform, we actually use a different email. We set up a different email. That's a security thing. Another thing is, if there's financial information put on, I ask them to get a prepaid card or something like that, so it's not tying the platform to their bank or to a credit card where it's going to be. So then there's limits on that for spending, because the reality is if we want to do ads, if we want to do anything on these social platforms, we're going to have to pay. And I think I could be wrong in this, but I think part of the plan is that some of these platforms are going to take us into paid versions of things. So it's no longer going to be free to us. And that's okay. Well, we pay for a lot of things in business, right?
What's that blue check mark is a paid thing. It's a plus, paid. You know, we've seen Twitter move into subscriptions, which is a paid thing. So then, yeah, I mean, you're exactly right.
Exactly. And then two, the other thing is, even just because the platform asks for your phone number or they ask for your address or they ask for that, it's actually an option with most. You don't have to. You can, but you don't have to. And so, you know, there's some measures too that on a practical end we can take for privacy purposes, because at the end of the day, the platform's not in my inner circle, so to speak.
Right.
Right, where they deserve or have that trust factor yet with me to, for me to.
Ooh, trust factor.
There we go. Yeah. Rebecca, I sense you have a few nuggets here of goldness to share. What do you think of all this insanity or sanity? Is it even sane?
My observation is that we spend a lot of time worrying about the data that these things are going to extract from us. And to Ross's point of like, what don't you have already? If I'm on one, I'm on them all. But we don't really spend a lot of time talking about kind of how we've all just laid arms to let the content really influence and wash over us. So I think we need to think about how much it's taking from us, but also how much it's influencing our internal worlds and thoughts, and how kind of like enmeshed Amazon is in all of this, and just like the stock market and culture and politics. And we just kind of like lay down our arms and let it kind of wash over us and worry about the data. But I think we have some other things to worry about as well when media has this much of an influence. And then also what happens when we're all kind of divided and conquered across a kajillion different platforms. So another argument for 100 TV and uniting under one flag.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I got to say that from a first impression, I spent a little bit of time on it this morning. What's nice is that it's a very clean feed. It's, you know, there's not a lot of bells and whistles right now, and it's mostly conversations with people that you know, you're connected to, you've been following, and there's no way that's going to last, though. Eventually, people are going to start promoting. Eventually, they'll get enough users to where they turn on ads. Eventually, they're going to start feeding you those that pay for the check mark or whatever. Like, I just can't imagine that this sort of friendly, like, hey, we're all hanging out in this one little space and all we're doing is saying hi to each other and whatever. That's going to last. That's going to last a week or something. And I'm not sure I understand yet what the value of this platform is. I'm certainly not giving up on Twitter, because whether or not I post every day on Twitter, there's still a lot of value in Twitter as a search engine and as a source of getting the pulse quickly of what's going on with live news or sports or live events, and what journalists are talking about. And so if they come over here, I don't know that I'm going to follow them here. This seems much more personal. Whereas on Twitter, a follow doesn't really mean much. Just because you're following somebody, you're just, hey, I'm just there for the information. And this seems very much more intimate. Like your decision to follow somebody is like, I want to talk to this person and communicate with them.
What I found this morning, well, first of all, it kind of bugged me that I signed up for the app and I had no measure of going in there, controlling my privacy in any which way and form. It was just like, dive in. And then when it did go live, I forgot to turn off my notifications and my phone was pinging all night. I had to get up and turn the thing off. But on my feed was people I don't even know. I wasn't following them. So I don't know what the heck is up with that. I don't know. Maybe it was just like, hey, welcome to the party. You're going to get to know everybody. I don't know.
Yeah, I do think that this is probably an effort on the part of Facebook to find a product that they can grow with, because Facebook has been in a state of decline for many years now. So there's definitely, you know, and he's seeing a lot of activity. I'm talking about Mark Zuckerberg. He's seeing a lot of activity in Twitter, and the continued kind of, from what I gather, growth of the Instagram platform. So he's basically taking his only really growth platform that he has right now, and then layering on top of it a kind of a threaded conversation platform, which gives him much deeper data, kind of like what Twitter has, but it also creates a kind of a diversion from the realities of Facebook, which are rather grim right now for him. So,
yeah. And at the end of the day, like we've talked about before, by the way, this is what I love about 100 TV, where we're actually having conversation and getting to know one another and, you know, getting to hear everything. And on the chat, I'm seeing like a whole lot of scrolling going on here. A lot of awesome comments here, Stefan Kaplan, Beauty Bubbles there. At the end of the day, yeah, I mean, we can jump on every platform, but the thing is, like Rebecca said, are we caring about good content? Are we caring about relationships? And we can have, like, I'm on a lot of platforms, but at the end of the day, I have to find where really I'm engaging most and really bringing value in the connection. So I'm not.
Yeah, it's just another time sunk, you know.
Yeah, and right. Yeah, and really at the end of the day is like, you know, how many shiny things are we going to turn to? I'm not quitting Twitter anytime soon either. Has there been slow times in Twitter? Yeah. There's times where I've been going, geez, hello, is anybody there? You know, but then there's seasons where it's extremely valuable. And so.
And why would you give up a place where you have a following and where people still go to check out what you're doing and what you're putting on? And like, maybe you don't put stuff on there all the time, but still from events, when you do concerts, things like that, why wouldn't you put that on Twitter?
And like, I got on TikTok, okay? And remember the Snapchat days, and some people are still on that. And that was great for a season, and then it turned, like, sour. Like, you can even open that thing without going, ooh, you know? And same thing for me on TikTok for a while. But I just got tired of watching people, like, boogie woogie their tushy, you know, like
you gotta spend more time there.
It's like
you gotta spend more time there in order for the algorithm to really set to your interests.
Yeah, so
if you don't spend enough time, it's like, what am I looking at? It's like you're the previews of a movie.
Yeah,
but then
right?
Eventually it starts to catch on with what you like and what you're, you know.
So for me, I'm gonna dive back into TikTok more because there is value there for me and my audience, and a lot of my audience is there too. So like you said, Rebecca, there's concentrations of really good stuff there, and so why am I not gonna get in there? And
it's no secret I'm team TikTok. I'm the only team TikTok on the panel show.
You're our honorary Gen Z rep. You're going to do like you're going to do a segment one day on the show on TikTok. Whatever, just some topic and teach us exactly what you're loving about.
Challenge about accepted. Challenge accepted.
You know, Rob is encouraging us, stretching us in the whole podcast world. Ross here on YouTube, Rebecca, TikTok. Like, it's just awesome. I just love it. Anyways, that's about it for me. Wait.
Who you got in the cage match?
Oh, the cage match.
Got to tell us about that. Yeah.
To be honest, when I read that, I just went, oh, my God. Like, really? Two grown men?
It's a nerd fight.
Sorry, but it's kind of like, for me, it's like this, you know, when I was in high school, there was the guys that had to wear their muscle shirts and drive their Corvette up to the front of the, like, to me, it's just, it's such a turnoff. Sorry. A cage match? Like, really? No.
It's two sides of the same coin. They're pulling the other out of the same hat.
Yeah. The other side of this whole thing is that Zuckerberg is trained in martial arts. So he could kick Elon's butt. So,
but Elon, I saw there's pictures. He was like wrestling a sumo guy. And
are they real videos?
Exactly.
No, he put out his back. He wrecked his back, like the C8 or whatever, because he was trying to flip the sumo.
Flip the sumo. Wow.
Go Elon. Anyways, that's my take on the cage match.
Flip the sumo is my new favorite hashtag, y'all. Just flip since we're on Twitter.
All right, why don't we do this at the end of the show? I've been thinking, like, we need something for the end of the show. Why don't we do at the very end, like, our final, do a quick lightning round and come back with our predictions for what's going to happen with, what's it called, Threads. Such a memorable name. Okay, I'll stop. All right, now let's move on to LinkedIn. Rebecca, a new algorithm, which I'm sure everybody should be chasing, right?
It's a beautiful segue, actually, Ross, towards the tail end of our last topic of how do we start to engage on social media, not so much casting a wide net and trying to get as many eyeballs as possible. And one of the things I do love about TikTok are these super connected communities with hyper, shared special interests. That's where LinkedIn is going. They're responding to, kind of like this 42% year after year increase and like a new professional joining every 3 minutes or whatever the statistic is, and keeping people from flooding LinkedIn feeds with their posts and reposts of articles, which is no longer in fashion, and really trying to prioritize posts within your feed that if you are the original author, they're going to be shown to more of your connections. They're looking for people to have intimate conversations and their own subject matter expertise with posts that are insightful, relatable, and have meaningful conversation in the comments. I try, my own goal is to like write 2 sentences. If I can write 2 sentences, I consider that a meaningful comment. So LinkedIn is kind of leaning away from the one size fits all and trying to bring more connected communities. And I'm exhausted by all of it. And so much, you guys, like algorithm chasing, like this is great. These are the kind of posts I want to read. These are the kind of posts I want to write. These are the kind of posts I want to engage with. Hooray for the algorithm. And I'm celebrating that. And I hope that that's real and that it works. But to our larger conversation today about like this one on Threads and Instagram and suck and blah, blah, blah. It just becomes such a suck of your bandwidth and your time as an entrepreneur to just chase the algorithm. And I guess that's kind of the point, is to wear us all out until we're not competitive. But like, it's really something I think you have to balance with burnout, and it's okay. Like I'm bored to death with Facebook and Instagram, though. I'm just really not there. It's okay to not be there. It's okay to let some things go and concentrate on a couple of things. So that's what I'm here for today, is algorithm chasing in balance with, just burnout. And also, here's the information on how LinkedIn's algorithm is doing the thing.
Now, do you like LinkedIn as a social network or more as a place to have a profile that puts your professional brand out in front of the world, so you can have that when you're applying for a job or, people look you up for consulting services and things like that?
No.
You don't like it at all.
Okay. I mean, look, I wish that LinkedIn wasn't boring. I wish that we all had the courage to not just be like, I'm so grateful to be invited to this panel discussion today. And shout out, I'm just as guilty trying to find a way to make it sound interesting. But it feels more like a box you have to check in order to make everybody in the sandbox feel good, more than an inspired place to actually have genuine conversations. And I know it happens one at a time. Also, personally, I have never, ever, 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 ever gotten a lead on LinkedIn. That has never happened to me. I have never had someone say, I've worked for you. And I makeover profile. So mine is like robust and on point and full of personality. And it just doesn't really work for me that way. But maybe LinkedIn knows that I secretly kind of.
You know what I found interesting, Rebecca, is I read the article that you you shared, and there was a lot of interesting insights and moves to what they're doing. And I think it was Rob put a post out this morning, and you know what? A bubble popped up.
A beauty bubble?
Yeah, and it said, okay. "Did you find this in this content?" Content of value. And then I said yes, and then it took me to another bubble, and it said the author or the topic, and I clicked topic, I think. But I've never had that before, so they're actively taking steps to hear back from the LinkedIn audience,
right?
So good, because I'd much rather be in connected conversations. And if we can all just have a little more courage to be more genuine and authentic in LinkedIn, it will be less of a Dullesville place to visit.
Yeah, I can't say that I've really ever understood how the LinkedIn algorithm works or what works or doesn't. I don't know. I find it hard to get a lot of traction for things on LinkedIn unless you commit to being a LinkedIn social network person who goes on every day and is commenting and very involved. You know, when I was going live regularly on LinkedIn in the beginning, that was great. But otherwise, I don't know. I mean,
I have a lot of
followers on there, but it doesn't seem to, I'd be better off posting on someplace where I've got 10 followers. I'd probably get 3 people to read it by post on LinkedIn. I think I have 20,000 followers on LinkedIn.
Damn.
And they don't put it in front of any, they don't put my stuff in front of anybody. So I have an issue with LinkedIn, and I'm not sure what they're up to or what, if maybe I have some setting wrong in my set. I don't know, but
well, let's see if this is the,
but remind me in a couple of weeks not to renew my premium subscription, because
I clearly isn't doing
anything for me.
I think if you look at it as a publishing platform, I mean, remember Medium bought LinkedIn to become like this thought leadership. And I honestly feel like the biggest competitor to LinkedIn is Substack. So I just kind of, if you can kind of think of it as a publishing platform more than a sales opportunity, I think that's a way to look at LinkedIn in a healthy way.
Hmm. Yeah, it's been a platform that I've I've made a lot of business connections over the years. It hasn't translated. It's not like I've gotten a job through LinkedIn or something like that. That's never happened, because opportunities like that usually come from personal relationships. But it's, you know, it's a way, it's another way to stay in touch with kind of business relationships per se, which is different than Facebook. And then it's also different than Twitter. So I kind of look at it more from the type of people that I have a relationship with. I have those on LinkedIn. And that's, yeah. But Ross, I see the same thing too. I see a lot of people, like I get probably one or two of these a day where like a software development company is pitching me on their services or, you know, iTunes podcast promoter will contact me through this platform, right? I'm sure you get those too, Ross. And I'm sure
of course. Would you like the software to manage your employees on Livestream Universe? Well, if you click the little image next to Livestream Universe, you can see how many employees we have and why we wouldn't want an extensive you know, HR software system.
It's a shotgun approach.
I just got one pitching me on a content-free marketing plan where copywriter is all over my profile. Like, are you literally looking? Just literally not looking.
Yeah, it's a shotgun approach is what it is, and they're lucky if they ever hit a target that matches with their objectives.
Which deters everyone else from actually using that as an outreach tool.
Right.
Because now I'm afraid I'm going to get lumped in with this other group of charlatans who are just.
Right. So is the reason that you want, Elon to buy LinkedIn is because you think Elon is going to make LinkedIn better? Is that what you
who said I wanted Elon? Oh, Bruce.
Okay.
Bruce. Okay.
Here we go.
We're trying to diversify.
I want to like LinkedIn. I mean, I think it.
I know I want to.
But it's, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the other thing is, I don't understand what they feed me. And then once they feed me that content, then they feed me more of it. Because if I'm only getting what they feed me and they're judging what to send me next based on what I look at, like how many seconds or minutes my eyeballs are on a post or whatever, but they're only sending me posts that are annoying me. So I'm, you know, sort of reading them, but not really wanting to. It's like, how do I break out of that mold? I got to go searching like topics and stuff and then liking those and what, like, it's too much work.
So well, apparently this is the solution though, is the new algorithm. So maybe you'll be happy.
Maybe.
LinkedIn, I go to LinkedIn, I do a search and I get, I'm much quicker find there on the business end what I want to see rather than Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. Like I can read and go a little deeper into stuff. As an entertainer and also influencer at times, this is what the agents look for and the venues, because if I'm performing at a venue, I'm also an influencer for the venue. If they go to my platforms, they don't see following, they don't see engagement, they don't see recent content, then I go to the bottom of that list. And so for my world, it's really important. So if I'm coaching an entertainer, I say, get those platforms hopping. You just need to get the numbers up. You need to get the activity up and engagement and get in there and engage too. So I don't know, for my world, that's kind of where, even though sometimes I don't want to be on a platform.
That's a catch 22.
It is.
Get visibility without it. And yet it also detracts you from doing real business.
It is. And I've gotten more work over other people because I'm active on the platforms, because they do search. Now, also, too, I've been on judge panels where I'm judging other artists for awards. And I have to go through not only their music, but their video quality. I have to go to all their social media and have a look. Is their links active to their website? Is there engagement? So you see in the entertainment world, when people are trying to get ahead, social media is very, very important. And sometimes it's a pain in the arse, because who wants to be on a bazillion, right? I watch the boogie woogie, you move your tushy. Anyway, so that's what I'm seeing in the entertainment world. It is a catch 22. You have to be there.
And then LinkedIn is also a good way to manage a large number of business contacts too. So that's the other thing that I use it for as well, is that, you know, I've got probably 16,000 people that have connected with me on there. And so it's
full.
Yeah. And it gives me a place that I can go in. And if I need to reach out to someone, and sometimes this works or not, it kind of depends on if they're a premium subscriber or not. But they can send you an email if they're a premium subscriber, when if they're not a premium subscriber, they can't send you a message. So it depends on how they have their settings made, but it does make people that sometimes like to hide more accessible, right? So if I need to reach someone because I have some opportunity or some desire to work with them or to do an interview with them or whatever, it's a pathway that I can find people that is not typically available through Twitter. Sometimes Twitter it's available, and then Facebook it's definitely very, very often not available. So it's sometimes the only pathway really to find certain people.
Yeah.
Very cool. So yeah.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's how I use
Rebecca
it. Right.
Because she puts out like killer content. Yeah. I want to hear what that girl's got to say.
So
but it's true. I don't post kind of extreme content on LinkedIn because I do recognize it as kind of like a business oriented website. So I think about content in that context when I share things over there or I comment over there. I'm constantly kind of trying to protect my professional integrity and my professional, appearance. Right. So, Facebook is a little bit more family, friends, that kind of stuff, but there is a lot of overlap, right, between those two. And Twitter is kind of like a free for all. You have no idea who you're reaching on Twitter, right? Or if you're reaching anyone, really.
Right.
Hey, I follow my FBI agent. She's pretty cool.
It's gonna be there for you.
On all the cases that are new.
Right.
There you go. All right, let's take a quick network ID, and we'll be back in 10 seconds and talk about why everything you thought you knew about YouTube is wrong.
We're so glad you're joining us on 100 TV. If you haven't done so already, please like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell.
All right, so this is the Stream Leader Report live panel. Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, Rob Greenlee, and Ross Brand. And I want to talk about the rise of legal live streams and why those, along with other long-form content, basically invalidate everything that the gurus have told us about YouTube over the past half to maybe full decade about what works on YouTube. I mean, you have these legal live streams that just popped up during the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. And some of these people have quit their jobs as lawyers. They're making so much money. They've built big audiences. There've been articles over the years about them. And what the conventional wisdom, I guess, was for YouTube is, you should have evergreen content, not focus on current events and trending news topics, but focus on your area of expertise, very much niche down, and always bring back people to your evergreen content. It was short form over long form. It was you grow through your regular videos, and then you engage your community with live streaming. Clearly, these folks are growing and monetizing through live streaming. They're doing it through long form, and they're doing it through covering the events of the day, even if those videos 5 years from now might not have the same following, although we don't know that, because somebody's going to be searching for something related to an issue that was in the news, and it's going to want to watch a discussion of it. So anyway, I think the way you approach YouTube, if you thought you had to do evergreen, short form, how-to videos, and that was the way to succeed, clearly people are doing really well with long-form content, and that goes along with what we've talked about in other weeks with video podcast content. And so that's what I'm kind of learning from seeing all these breakout stars in the legal and other niches
where
they follow the news.
Yeah, I've seen it happen, too, around body language experts, too, that will take those same videos that the lawyers talk about those cases, and they'll analyze the body language of the people that are doing the testimony or whatever to see if they're lying or not.
And are those are usually live streams, right?
Yeah, sometimes.
A mix.
Yeah. And they'll play the actual clips from the trial, and then they'll go around the panel, just like what we have here. And they'll analyze, different, aspects of, clips that are taken from people. And they've done this for like Bill Gates, and they've done this for other types of people that are, high visibility people in the media and talking about controversial topics and just trying to figure out if they're lying or not. Is this person trustworthy? It should be a topic on Trust Factor, is the body language topic.
Yeah, you should do that. You should do an episode, have somebody on who breaks down some of the key public figures.
That is hot.
Claudia, what does your FBI person have to say about
it? Okay. I wasn't sure if I could name names. So her name is Jennifer Coffendaffer, and she is an ex-FBI agent. She's like all of 5'0" and 100 pounds soaking wet. She's this little thing. But man, is she's on the ball. And girlfriend delivers factual stuff and makes people really think. But so her big push is helping find missing children, missing people. So I don't know. There's a big part of me that just really cares about that. Mm-hmm. And I really care about the process, the legal processes of stuff and bringing justice to where so many have been injusticed. And sometimes they find the kids or the adults even, and sometimes they don't. And then when they or they do, but they're not alive. And so then she covers things like court cases. And so there's always links to the live court cases and stuff like that. So, I mean, I've learned a lot, even just from my own practical outworkings of daily life, not to be so naive about some things, because there's some quirky people out there. And then it's also opened up my eyes to how much injustice there is in the world with human trafficking and everything else. So anyway, her name is Jennifer Coffendaffer, and yeah, you can find her. I follow her on Twitter. She's on a social. And then two time ago, I don't know if you guys followed that Brian Laundrie and Gabby Petito case. She kind of partnered up a lot with this other guy who was like unknown. His name's Brian Enten. He's another one to follow. Solid quality reporter. And anyway, I could go in. That's my nerdy right there.
Well, Rebecca, you're doing live on your own channel on 100 TV. You've produced a long form series that's really been great. Talk about your experience with YouTube, what you like to create and what you like to watch.
Oh my God, I hope long form is the thing, because Monday's episode is 120 minutes long.
Wow.
I hope so. It is experimental to do that 120 minutes long.
She's dropping a double album.
That is an amazing way of thinking about it.
Yes.
I wanted to try doing it's you're really following one entrepreneur through weeks and weeks of brand development. And I wanted to do core values in one episode where we do the discovery and then I brainstorm them and then we validate, we pick 5 to 7 and then I wrote descriptions for them and we did the whole thing in one episode.
Wow.
So I wanted to try what that was like versus part 1 and part 2 of that work. So I hope so, Ross. Zach is always telling me long form is not it. It's like 7 minutes or less and you have to talk at twice the speed of whatever, and we need energy and excitement. It doesn't feel as good to me as long form, and I am hoping that actually there is storytelling selling through storytelling that can happen in that medium, and that it's not just like the constant McDonald's drive through of 7 minutes or less or shorts or all right, of the right. things which feel frenetic. So I'm in a big experimentation phase with it. I'll let y'all know. Join me for the live stream here on 100 TV.
Yeah, there you go.
And yeah.
On Monday? Is this on Monday?
On Monday, right after my other favorite show, The Trust Factor.
So Trust Factor's at 10 a.m. Eastern and then 10:30 a.m. Eastern.
That is correct. Okay. Yeah.
And it doesn't mean, what I'm saying here doesn't mean that short form doesn't work. It does work, and it's a part of YouTube, and it can be a part of your overall mix of content. It's just the idea that if you're a newer or smaller channel, that you need to either stay away from long form or you need to only do evergreen or how-to content. People have built channels doing nothing but long form live stream talk shows or produced longer type of talk, video podcast style or creative, different types of creative content that isn't, a 5 to 7 minute tutorial about something that somebody would search. How do I blah, blah.
Well, you were the one who told me live stream your two directions. It's pull back the curtain and show the work, and it's live stream, live selling. So I'm trying both of those things. For me, it's a grand experiment. I don't have an audience that I'm going to lose. I'm starting from nothing. So long form feels right to me, and it is the fly on the wall perspective. And I hope there's room for all of us at the table. Let's just make more pie.
Yeah. I encourage you, Rebecca, because your content is so rich and so deep and so authentic. And I'm not just saying that lightly. It is. And so a long form content of what you produce, I can hardly wait to see it. Yeah. Aww. It brings a lot of value. Yeah.
Thanks, girl. You filled my bucket.
Yeah.
I love this panel.
You know, when I first started live streaming, and Ross knows this, that I did rehearsals like in my studio. And I would show the good, the bad, and the ugly. Like, I would literally be pitchy on notes. I would miss lines. But I took my audience for a ride, and I just said, hey, come see me as I am when I'm rehearsing. And because sometimes when we polish it up too much, and when people see me on stage or in pictures and stuff, they go, oh, man, girlfriend's got all together, you know. No, I wanted to show the journey. I want to show that. And so that was long form content. Sometimes my live stream would be an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. I mean, and people would hang on and they would jump in and they jump out, they jump in. And then I created more of a shorter thing where it was, hey, I'm going to live stream, but I'm only going to do a nighttime serenade for 10 minutes. Right. But the people valued it.
One of the great things you did too was that you talked to the audience, like you told them about what you were doing, like why you were going to do this song or what it meant to you or why you think it's a great song or whether it's a difficult song to do or an easy song to do, or, you know, the band's picking it up or they're not quite ready yet with it or whatever. And it's like, but that's what worked during the pandemic for all these musicians who succeeded and enjoyed the live streaming experience. Those who just treated it like a live stream, like a concert where they're on stage and everybody else is this far off audience that they don't have any contact with, generally didn't have a good experience with live streaming, you know, during the pandemic when they couldn't do shows. Nobody wants to see your stadium show from your living room to nobody, right? Like, right. They want to feel like you're engaging with each person,
and
if you're talking to 100,000, right?
And it was in our studio, which we've set up professionally, and it's kind of true to stage. Like, we have lights up here. True to stage, and they get hot. I have fans blowing, number one, to keep that cool, but two, the menopause hits, you know. And, you know, people would go, hey, that's like a quality show. I mean, she's got lights going on. I mean, so I brought them into an experience, but they remembered the connection, you're right. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm wearing the blonde today is we talk about Twitter and Threads and all these crazy platforms everywhere. At the end of the day, I'm still Claudia. It doesn't matter what I wear, what stage I'm on. Like, at the end of the day, if we're authentic to who we are and we bring the people in and we bring them value, we bring them actual care, that we really care about them. One of my mentors said, you know, in her network, she doesn't see people as a number. And she's proven that to me. So I try to do the same thing when I go live or whatever platform I'm on.
Yeah, being genuine and real is what this is all about. It's about human connection. And that makes that happen. And it builds, you know, to play off of what my show is about, it builds trust with people. People like to know that what they're hearing or the feeling that they have is real. It's not just fake. Now, granted, that's a little bit of a tug of war with the entertainment industry, because they tend to, there's a history of, you know, creating that as like a product. But I think what you're doing is it comes across as a real genuine.
Through that, this sounds going to sound as I never expected this, but through that, my crazy rehearsal live streams, I got work. I got conference people that were putting on conferences. They needed an MC for their virtual conference. They needed a halftime show. They would reach out to me and say, hey, Claudia, you've got a great studio. Can we hire you to do the halftime show at our entrepreneurial conference? So they're, you know, so when through COVID, when no one was getting work, I was getting work. So, you know, one women's conference, I was like rocking it up and I did this and my eyelash came off. Half of it was hanging on down my face. And so I'm whooping it up and then I rip it off and I say to the ladies, hey guys, here's my eyelash. You know, like, cause you're live, right? So anyways, I digress, but all to say again, you know, all of us carry this, all of us, not just me. All of us carry this authenticity, and it doesn't matter what color our hair is, our setting is, what platform we're on, that's going to shine through.
Absolutely. Rob, where are the new podcast listeners coming from? There've been a lot of studies and different surveys and so forth. What's going on as far as podcast listeners and growth?
Yeah, I just wanted to share kind of a study that came out from a research company that kind of put out this huge survey report, but I just captured one screenshot from it that really, I wanted to talk about new podcast listeners, right? And this is on the listening side, not the creator side. So trying to share that. And I do have a slide that I can pop up on the screen.
Great.
That I don't know if that's visible or if you can see that.
You have to add it to the stream.
It's coming.
Here we go.
It's coming.
Woo.
All right. Can you see it?
Okay. Yep. Absolutely.
I guess it takes a minute to show up there. But
podcast newcomers started listening in the past year, more likely to be female, and 18 to 34, 1 in 4 newcomers are 50 plus. So, yeah, it's up.
Yeah, so 30% of total weekly podcast consumers are considered kind of new newcomers to podcast listening, and they tend to be a younger generation, and they tend to be like 60% of them are female. So what we're starting to see is that the overall kind of demographic makeup of podcasting is getting closer and closer every year to being almost an exact reflection of the population, right? Of the breakdown of listeners. And consequently, what we're seeing is that the creator side is adjusting to that as well. I think we're seeing larger numbers of female podcasters come into the market than males now. I think it's a disproportionate number have been. And if you look at like the top 500 podcasts, I think a significant number, and I don't know what the percentage of that is, are female hosted shows. So, so that's kind of like a big development in the podcast medium. I think, I mean, the male population, is strong in the kind of what's called the pioneer side of, podcasts listening. Those that have been listening to podcasts for more than four years, tend to be a fairly dominant male audience. But what you're seeing is that there's a tremendous influx of female listeners into podcasting as other types of genres are being created and female creators are coming into the market increasingly. So, and I think it's a good sign for the future. And the 18 to 34 age group is really the age group that built podcasting. Actually, it was probably a little bit older than that. You know, in the early days of podcasting, this was like 15 years ago, the average demo of a podcast listener was probably 20, 24 to 34. So now you're seeing that shift. That age group is shifting into the 40s age group range, 40s and 50s now. So, you know, you can see that, you know, in the early days of podcasting, younger listeners weren't really listening to podcasting as much as we all would have liked. And so that has changed a lot as we've seen younger content being created. So I'm going to stop sharing here, but I don't know if if anybody else wants to share anything that they've noticed, Ross, is there anything that you've noticed?
I'm sorry, ahead, Ross. I'm going to just piggy, jump in front of you in line. I would love to see an overlay of genre of podcast to see how much the true crime podcast space has grown with that female audience.
Yeah, it's a big factor, and actually, this survey does talk about that a little bit, and it is in each of those categories of listeners, the long-term listeners and especially the new listeners. It's like in either the top or the second place.
When I see all those female numbers.
Right.
When I see all those female numbers. I'm thinking true crime. Claudia, I know you're a true crime podcast listener. I can tell just by your FBI Twitter follow.
Right? No, I'm not. I need to. See, I have not. The podcast
really
world
this,
has not right? been my primary go-to. Mm-hmm. I'm super visual. But this is where I love this panel, because I'm learning so much from Rob, and I inquisitive minds need to know, where are people listening, Rob? Like, with podcast distribution, do you have a sense of what the majors are?
Well, that's a little bit of a controversy right now, to some degree, based on a couple of research data. This study kind of looked at that to some degree, and it's currently ranking YouTube is the number one place people are discovering podcasts. If you look at it purely from a consumption standpoint, how much content is being consumed or downloaded, depending on what that metric is, Apple is still by far the biggest platform for consumption of podcasts. But if you look at just the volume and scale that YouTube has around how people are discovering content just overall, there's a lot of creators like this show could be seen as a podcast, right? We're mainly just talking heads, right? This show could be converted into an audio podcast. So
by tonight, probably, right? Or tomorrow.
Right. So people watching this on YouTube could see this as a podcast, right? Whether or not this podcast is actually put out in Apple Podcasts, is kind of what the controversy is right now. But clearly the younger generation that's coming up, like I was sharing, those new listeners, that skews very heavy towards YouTube. And just like Claudia said here, it's very visual, and that's why people are gravitating that direction. And that's why I also feel that this what we're doing with 100 TV is kind of the future of this. There's more of a convergence happening in this area because of the demographic makeup of the listener. So
just one quick little question then.
Yep.
So with distribution, is there a sense to distribute like to a bazillion platforms? Like, what we know, Stitcher has now changed up too.
Well, they've shut down. So
they've shut down. Yeah.
Right.
So is there value in distribution with podcasts?
Yeah, you need to be in all the listening platforms. So if you have an RSS feed that has an audio show in it, it is technically possible to put a downloadable video file in your RSS in a separate RSS feed, and then submit that into Apple as well. So you can distribute. A lot of people aren't doing it anymore. It used to be much bigger than it is now, but you know, as we're seeing, more people are putting video into these other platforms like YouTube and even growing to some degree, the Rumble platform is also another one that's getting a lot of video content and getting a lot of followers. And we're seeing some success with some of the shows that we're putting over there too. So it's an up and coming platform. It's almost like a alternative economy type of a situation. It doesn't have any kind of censorship which is another phenomenon that's happening as well. There's a lot of very popular content creators out there that are talking about topics that are not, you know, within the guidelines of YouTube, right?
Yeah.
And they're getting blocked or demonetized or those kind of things. And this is like an outlet that those shows can go to continue producing content and reaching audiences. And so you're seeing this kind of dynamic in the market. And now we're seeing, you know, this Threads thing pop up, and that will probably wind up being a pretty significant video distribution platform as well, as my speculation, as we see even Twitter get more involved in the distribution side. So I think more than ever, the distribution side of podcasting or any kind of audio and video is becoming even more diverse and actually more complicated. So, but the opportunities are there if you're willing to put in the grunt work to make it happen. So it takes a lot of work to be on all these platforms.
My question with this, did they consider YouTube in this survey, the one that you were reporting on? Did they count?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the number one platform.
And then how do they determine what's a podcast on YouTube and what's just an uploaded video?
It's you know, purely like, what their survey respondents
consider a podcast. So
right. So when they said that the consumer primarily watch judges. Podcasts on YouTube,
right.
But I also watch or listen to podcasts on Apple Podcasts. So they asked both questions. But the survey respondents primarily said that they're discovering their favorite shows increasingly on YouTube.
Interesting.
What's interesting too is that I always made my talk shows and my interview shows and mm-hmm. so forth into podcasts when I was keeping up with that, sometimes better than other times. But I've also started taking regular YouTube, like even how-to videos that I do with where I'm sharing my screen and showing how you mm-hmm. sign into an app or something like that. And because I realized, you know, I'm talking through it, basically the process. So it's sort of simulcast friendly. Why wouldn't people want to listen to that if they're binging on the audio side mm-hmm. or they're searching for something? Now, I don't think people do as much searching for how-to stuff in the podcast directories as they do on YouTube. But
yeah, it tends to be longer form
Somebody's going to come up with a platform on the audio side mm-hmm. that's much more search friendly than, you know, some of the big ones are right now for specifically what the content's about, more than like the mm-hmm. author and the title of the episode.
Yeah, I believe that both Apple and Spotify have announced that they're going to be working on improving their search capability of discovery of episodes. The other thing that came out of this research too that was really, really, really interesting is that shows that are discovered on YouTube that left YouTube and went over to only being like audio podcasts or on a different platform, right? If the content moved, let's say, from YouTube over to Rumble or over to Twitter or some other distribution platform, the research is showing that typically the majority of the listeners will move with the content creator. So there's not a lot of loyalty to YouTube to consume only content on YouTube.
Okay. So, that's interesting.
Yeah. So if you, and increasingly I'm seeing content creators will do like half their show on YouTube, and they'll delve into topics that are more controversial that won't work on YouTube that will work on Rumble. So they're basically splitting their time with their episode between YouTube and Rumble. YouTube can still capture a huge amount of viewers for you because of the scale of the platform, but increasingly Rumble is becoming a significant player too. I know one show's got 2 million subscribers on YouTube, and they've got like 400,000 on Rumble right now. So, and they've been trying to siphon off people to watch their full show on Rumble, because they can watch the full show on Rumble, but they can only watch half of it on YouTube. So you can see that there's a little bit of a motivation for the audience to just shift over to Rumble.
I wonder if TikTok would move into the podcast world like YouTube has.
I think they would have to probably, I think that there's a limit in duration, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's just 3 minutes, and you can do one that's 10 minutes, but, you know, three minutes.
I think if they extend that to be longer form content, they probably can.
That's what I'm wondering.
I think you want to think about TikTok like visual Twitter. Like, it's just
go.
Yeah.
But you saw what engaged. Happened to Twitter is they got longer and longer over the years because they started out at 140 characters, mm-hmm. and they shifted to 280, and now they're up to 5,000. So
it's pretty much write a blog post,
right? Yeah, that's a long
5,000 is a lot. Yeah, it is.
That's incredible. Yeah. It's moved to that.
Rob, I got a question. I think maybe some other people might have this question too, is we always hear about Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and a few other of the big Stitcher we used to hear a lot about. Mm-hmm. But there are, like, when you go to like Pod News and you look at all the places that they show that you're podcast is on or could be on, mm-hmm. are there a few of the lesser known apps that you would say those are ones to either follow or to check out, or even more so, if you have control over your information on those, go there and make sure it's displaying well, or they got your, you know, you got all your information looks good because people are using that, or it's indexing well in Google, or there's some reason that, you know, beyond just another listening preference, that there are some of the other smaller apps you should be paying attention to.
Yeah, let me pull up a screenshot of of a website that has all that listed, because there are a lot of new apps that are coming into the podcasting space that maybe a lot of people are not as familiar with. So let me see if I can find it really
quickly. By the way, Rob, I just want to say, I just love how you dig into stuff. And like, that is such a cool gift you have, and I love it.
Claudia, I second that sentiment. Getting to know Rob has been one of the delightful surprises of 100 TV. Mm-hmm. I learn a lot from you.
Well, thank you.
In fact, when you had that slide up, I screenshot it and sent it to my boyfriend, who's a podcast producer, and he was like, wow, this is so helpful. So, like, not only am I learning, but the rest of the audience is. So it's really cool to get to know you.
I feel like I'm in a master class sometimes. I'm like, oh, this is so cool.
Okay, I think I found it. Well, thank you, you guys. I appreciate that. So I'm going to pull it up here so you can all see it. It's a web page that's at newpodcastapp.com. Can you see it?
Here it is.
Yeah. It just popped up.
It's coming in now?
Yeah.
There it is.
Okay. So if you look at this list, this is at newpodcastapp.com. So it's a list of all of these new podcast platforms that you can go check out. There's hosting in here too, but there's also new apps, new listening apps. Yep. And some of these new ones support more kind of advanced features, mm-hmm. and some integration with like cryptocurrency or Satoshis. And it lists off to the right over here kind of the capabilities that the platform has that are kind of at the cutting edge of the podcasting medium today. So you can get here and just go through this list and see all of the various platforms that are in the podcast area, even finding a podcast host if you want to find one in here as well, if you want to create a podcast. So it has all that.
Podcastapps.com.
Yeah, exactly.
So, apps with an S.
I didn't have the S, so I'm like in the wrong place. So new.
Oh, thanks, 100 TV.
Yes, 100 TV. Thank you.
Yep. So this is a site called Podcast Index at podcastindex.org/apps APPS is another way to get to it. So. But it's a fairly comprehensive list of some of the new listening platforms that are out there, and they're basically apps for your phone. So here, let me close this up, and I'll come back to you guys.
I have a question for Ross. With your books, have you done audiobooks and put them in podcasts?
I have not done audiobooks.
Okay.
I think that's an interesting concept. I think I probably should, but it just
one of those.
It's a lot once you get the book done and get it out and all the different versions of ebook and paperback. And
I was Couldn't you, though, ask each contributor to supply a recording of them reading their production out loud, and then all you're doing is...
I thought about that. I did think about that, and I think maybe that's something we do. Like, when they do their prediction, it goes right into a, like, you know, they fill out the form, and instead of it just, you know, something where you record audio.
Or, I mean, so, I don't know yet because
But I think it has to be, like, the quality of the audio, though, has to be very good for I don't think it can just be, like, I'm walking around with my phone, like, hey, my prediction, it, like, even maybe, even if I was recording it and I have pretty good equipment here, I would probably do some soundproofing or something. Like, they're definitely pretty high standards, I think, for what you what they want from the audio.
Hire Jody. Or your client, Rebecca.
Yeah, Janine.
Janine.
Who's going through it in Business in the Raw.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good call.
Anyways, just to, yeah, I just got...
That's a good idea, though, Claudia. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, so let's do a quick lightning round before we wrap up. What's your prediction for Instagram Threads a year from now? Will we be using it? Will it be a competitor to Twitter, or will it be somewhere near Vine or some of the other apps that came, had their moment, and went? Claudia, you brought in the story. What do you think?
Well, I think Zuckerberg's no dummy. I don't think he's going to leave it as is. He's got, from the get-go, he had a bigger picture and plan. I remember way back when I got asked to, by my managers, to start out Facebook. I did a little digging into it, and Twitter, Zuckerberg's vision for it was that people would buy plane tickets through there. They would be doing, like, almost, so what Elon is saying, I don't think is too far off. I think he's creating a world of his own, and so it'll be interesting.
It's the X app, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting, and here we go. Ready for the ride.
All right, I was going to ask you for a prediction, Rob, and now I want to know what the X app is.
X app.
Well, that's the new company name. I don't know if you heard or not.
For Twitter?
For Twitter, right.
Oh, wow.
That's the parent company is called X.
X.
So he's talked about creating a kind of like an all-encompassing super app. Even back in his days, I think that's what his vision was back in his PayPal days, was to create, you know, take PayPal and build on top of it, create a much more robust app that was involved in e-commerce and helping in all sorts of areas. And I think that's why he bought Twitter. I think one reason is because of the AI capability based on the massive amount of data that Twitter has. Hmm. And increasingly they're adding AI to Twitter's capabilities. So you layer that on top of his ambition to make it a transaction platform, make it an e-commerce platform. You know, who knows how far this goes. There's a
podcast
lot of people that
and video shows and
right. There's been rumors that that'll be a podcast listening app at some point, which is ironic because the founders of Twitter originally started out before Twitter with a podcast app. So that's a little known kind of history of Twitter, is that Twitter took, actually the original platform was called Odeo, and they actually sold the code for Odeo to fund the development of Twitter.
So will Threads be around, and how will it be doing a year
I think Threads will probably be around. I think as you think about it, I mean, I've looked in there too, and there's a lot of people, a lot of big name people have already jumped in there. So I think it will be around. I think the question gets back to is, who's it going to pull from? Is it going to pull from your time you spent in Facebook, or is it going to pull from your time that you spend in Twitter? I think that's the that's the real cage match. Sure, we're talking about Elon and Zuckerberg going at it in a fist fight, but maybe this is basically the epitome of the fist fight. It's going to be between Twitter and Threads.
And of course, not everybody's on Twitter, or some people kind of missed the time when Twitter was big and they never, you know, when it was right. really in its heyday and they never got on. And this is like their first opportunity. So I think they're also pulling in new people who never did Twitter. And speaking of people who never were on Twitter, Rebecca, what's your prediction for a year from now?
And what Rob said.
Are you going to get on this thing, or you're going to let the ship pass?
No, but I am thinking about how Rob said earlier that video could be a thing. So maybe it's not so much that is it Twitter or Facebook that you're spending time on, but I can also bring TikTok into it. If you had a TikTok, if you had a Twitter and a TikTok hybrid, that would be very interesting to see, where it's like the written word and video. So I'm curious about that, but I'm really for the golden threads that weave us all together at 100 TV. Those are the threads I'm following.
There we go.
Golden threads.
I really can't. That. There's no way to top that.
right.
Claudia?
You know what? I did a little experiment when I did sign up for Threads. It gave me the option to follow all my followers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I'm going to try something here. I'm going to try and see what happens without me doing that. And so it's been very interesting to see the people that have followed me on there since I got on there, because I never linked. I didn't link it, so to speak. But on Instagram, I noticed right away, if you look on your Instagram profile, I don't know if you've seen that, there's a code there. There's a link there. Two threads now, automatically.
Yep. Mm.
Makes sense.
I saw that too.
And that's why it might just make it. I think it's not a revolutionary concept. A lot of the features, much like other features that Meta has not exactly developed, but picked up from others, and nothing wrong with that. If you can take a feature and make it better, or give it a bigger platform or what have you. But
yeah.
We shall see. I don't have a strong feeling either way. But thanks everybody for joining us. This has been a lot of fun, as it is every week. For Rebecca Gunter, Business in the Raw, Viva La Stage, and Claudia Santiago, and Rob Greenlee, the host of Trust Factor, I'm Ross Brand. This is the Stream Leader Report live panel. And we'll see you again next week, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, for another live panel.